Hi, I'm Kim.
Hi, I'm Tora.
And this is our podcast, Kicking It with Kim and Tora. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today we have one guest and you will meet him now. Hi, Hucky, how are you today?
Doing great, doing beautiful. Hope you all are well.
Yes, we are. Hucky, meet Tora, my co-host.
Thank you. This is Hucky,
I mean, the success scholar, right?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Mm-hmm.
We have two questions for you, and without further ado, we'd like to dive right in. Your first issue is, I know that Pan-Africanism and the connection to Africa is a passion of yours, and I'd like for you to share a bit about that with our audience, please.
Certainly. Thank you for this opportunity. Well, so for those that may not know, I'm Hucky Amida, Success Scholar. I've been a strong student of African history in many different aspects. I consider myself a practical Pan-Africanist and theorist of sorts. So what that means for me is that I attempt to understand the global picture, both historically as well as contemporarily. I do not attempt to worship all African traditions and believe that somehow that we must adapt various African traditions to consider ourselves Africans. I believe that you are African based upon your consciousness, first and foremost, of course, your skin and your connection. So with that being said, I realized that we have a mission and an agenda to ensure that African people and Africa totally as a whole is liberated. So understanding that, and for me, knowing that, you know, Africa is certainly a big place, and, you know, when you're one individual, you have to know that you can only achieve so much by yourself. So you have to look at models historically of what certainly has worked, but I do recognize and realize that we live in a new world. And so what I've done for myself, of course, we have to study the greats. And just yesterday, and let me give a shout out to the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey.
Yes, who just had an Earth Day yesterday.
Yes. And so I was actually in New York in Harlem where they had the Garvey Day Parade last night. So I just got back from that. I mean, I went up for some other business and networking type of things, but in Queens, but I went down to Harlem for that.
Can I jump in really quick before you move on? I wanted something that you just said. You said that we want to make sure that, first of all, I want to thank you for explaining what Pan-African means to you, because still I'm new to this, and I'm quite sure viewers are new to just the word alone. Kim is very fluent in that language, so she knows exactly what it is. But I heard you say we have to liberate Africa. And I just know that when I hear people say that part, I always think we're not liberated Africans here in, well, if you consider yourself an African American, which I only know myself to be of African descent, which makes me an African American. But I feel like we're not liberated here. So why is your fight with Africa for Africa and not just with the United States for Africans?
Well, and that's a good question. And this is what I mean practical understanding for what African people, African liberation means. Now, one thing, and I don't theorize, I mean, you African, wherever you are, first and foremost, and of course you have to create liberated zones, if you will, or liberated spaces wherever you are, safe spaces, to the best of one's ability. But I do realize, for instance, that, you know, we as a people, we cannot, you know, give up, you know, the world's largest landmass the world's largest natural resources for some small token existence that we have here. With that being said, and I'll, you know, in a later, little later commentary, that if we look at the global power structure and how historic Africa has been divided, there was what was called the Berlin Conference, where they carved up Africa into various spheres and, you know, kind of shared it with various European nations.
And into the countries, really, that exist now. Because prior to that, they were not grouped by these little isolated countries. They went by tribes and kingdoms. Right. So the Berlin Conference created this. And despite what we are calling African liberation, it still exists. Those same carvings, for the most part, still exist.
Okay, so if backed by all the other countries, if the United States is the biggest dictator to Africa and other countries, like Haiti and you name it, all the other countries that are struggling right now, if we're the biggest dictators, how come no one wants to attack everything here and start here with all the resources and the money here? How come we don't build that mass here first, and then we can go and maybe help with a stronger force in Africa? I don't know what Africa has over there that they're not going to give them a military. United States is not going to give Africa a military. They've given it to Afghanistan, of course. But
The various countries do have militaries, and they tend to be British or American or Russian trained. Mm-hmm. So Kenya has an army, is British trained.
Our army.
You mean to use American forces? They would never.
Military on the planet. Like, there's no supposed to be bar none with the United States. So what I'm saying is, how come we haven't found the knowledge to say, okay, well, we know we need the military. We have to have that so why aren't we working with the United States to say, listen, you know, if you want to be this power source that you claim to be, we can do this, but you got to help liberate Africa. I don't understand how come
it goes back to what I'm always talking about, which is white supremacy and racism. There's no way on earth the United States government is going to use its military to go over and liberate Africa, because the people we'd be liberating them from are the British and the Americans.
That's my yin and my yang. What I was asking, that you'd rather give all of Africa's resources to these people who clearly have been holding you down for millions of years, or do you want to start at home and say, okay, listen, you know, we have probably the most Black people besides Africa in the world. So why wouldn't we want to partner up with Africa and the United States instead of Germany, you know, the UK or wherever? You know, why would we want to partner up with them when clearly they've been holding them down for so long? Great Britain, Australia, everybody's been holding Africa down for its resources. And
and China too now. China is a big
China's a big colonizer. So my thing is this, why haven't the United States have said, okay, yeah, now let's partner up with Africa, use our military, our resources. Like, I don't understand how are we liberating Africa when they have like you said, they have some military, but it's backed by other countries for their fight.
I think, do you want to go ahead, Haki?
Go ahead. Just go ahead.
I think that when we use the word, the phrase, or the term United States, we have to be really clear about what we're talking about, because the United States government is the government. Those of us in the United States, African Americans, we don't control the government, we don't control the military, we don't control the financial resources, and we don't have the ability to say, let's use American resources to quote unquote liberate Africa. Because as far as the American government is concerned, they are liberated. There is no country under there that is not so-called independent, although we know behind the strings with the aid and stuff like that, America and other countries are pulling the strings. So, I mean, the only people we'll be liberating Africa from is the United States and Great Britain. In no time do I expect the United States government to come in and say, okay, I'm going to help you free yourself from our clutches. Is that in line with what is that? Does that answer the question? And Haki, would you like to add to that? But Tora, is that responsive to what you're asking or not really?
Yeah, that was definitely what I was asking, but it just seems to me we have, out of all the other countries in the world and all the other continents, like, we are the ones who have been fighting the hardest to liberate Africa. And even though I know you have told me several times, no, it's been, this fight has been going on in other countries forever, but I feel like we are the ones that have the biggest voice, the loudest voice, the most resources, the most.
Now, let's take a little moment to recognize our sponsors. We will now return to our current episode.
Money, the military.
No military. Black African Americans have no military.
No, we don't have it, but we're in it. You know what I'm saying? We're in the military.
Yeah, I can't ever see. If that ever happens, the whole system collapses to me. But Haki, what's your, that's a really good question though, Tori. Haki, what is your take on that?
Well, first I wanted to also add that France certainly has its hands in.
France is a big one.
Yes, they have their hands in many different things. But also wanted to mention, the sister mentioned, you know, about Black populations, and Brazil as well has a very large, significant Black population. So we certainly have to keep, you know, the global African perspective in mind, with the Afro-Brazilian community. So,
but they don't have any power like African Americans, unless I'm mistaken. No.
That's what
I'm very much more oppressed.
No, of course, yes, absolutely. And this is where what I mean by practical understanding of what power we actually do have in the world, and as well as here and in America. So, I mean, of course, there are ideological things and intellectual things that can happen in terms of lobbying, and of course, you know, various forms of protest. But I think ultimately that a global economic strategy is certainly needed. So it's going to take individuals or small collectives that can see that big picture first and foremost, of course. Because I, you know, when we think about contemporary militaries, you know, where they are sort of integrated, and where Black people are now in various positions, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to be, you know, defenders of African foreign policy, like how they're going to defend, you know, the U.S. military foreign policy. But I think that things have to be different now. You know, I think that they have to do things a little bit more tactful, like putting a Black president in the United States in order to push a particular agenda in Africa. So with that being said, ultimately for me, you know, I do recognize that there is definitely a fight here, but realizing that a long-term global strategy has to be the creation of these relationships, as well as, you know, I'd say teaching, you know, Africans, you know, like what we're doing in Tanzania, you know, having an info share exchange, that cultural exchange, where, because what's happening, it's, there's a information gap that we have to understand.
What are you teaching them there? What are you teaching them in Tanzania?
Well, I mean, ultimately, I mean, so I just think, first and foremost, we have to know where they are. You know, of course, you have to know what skills people have, for instance, and what's the economy like, how people make their living. So we can't, for me and us, we couldn't go in thinking that we're gonna teach them everything, because this is how they do things, but we also can look at their talents and skills and see how we can maximize those talents and skills through international exchange, through trade.
So are you teaching them for careers, for political action, for what? I mean, like, what is the goal ultimately if everything works? And I do understand you're saying there's an exchange, but I'm not clear, like, what are you teaching them?
When we had the Summer Learning Institute there just this past June, so there were several instructors. I gave several workshops at three universities, sort of like the history of film. We had like some film graduates there that we worked with. So they're working on a project still. So we first and foremost, we recognize the power, for instance, in America has been, you know, Hollywood. That's one, you know, power.
So cultural. You're getting them up to speed culturally on us and then learning theirs as well. So that's what the information exchange is. So our time just went out on the first question. But on the second question, which is what is the value of being involved in politics in the US? I think it kind of flows right into that, because you said, you know, one particular strategy could be to have a Black president in position in order to take action in connection with Africa, because I agree that a strong Africa is necessary for all of us in the diaspora. But what is the value as African-Americans of getting involved in politics here in America as you see it?
Certainly, thank you. Well, it's very critical, even if it's theoretically for optics, because honestly, there aren't many Black politicians that I am able to recognize that have a level of consciousness and independence, mm-hmm. first and then of action, that can totally be oriented to Black-centered issues. So I just don't find many of them that are even intellectually or first culturally, or even in their own independent research, they simply lack a Black.
Why do you think that our politicians have thrown their hands up and just feel like, you know, it's too corrupt, it's that's their problem, it's just too many issues. Every time somebody does try to help, they, you know, I'm almost like the president in Haiti, like your own people had to turn against you for that to happen. You know, so it's like, why do you think that it's so many people throw their hands up and not willing to fight for something that we need? I mean, all of us need, but mainly Black people need. Like, we already lost all of our heritage. Now our future generation is losing out. So why, how come it seems like you, of course, Cam, of course, and I are the only people, not the only people, but people like us are fighting for something like this. Like, we see the bigger picture. How is it that people in office don't see the same bigger picture that we see? Like, what are they missing? What are we not showing them, or what are we not telling them that they should know?
Right. Well, Dr. Amos Wilson has a book called-
I'm sorry, what was that name again?
Dr. Amos Wilson.
Oh, Dr. Amos Wilson, okay.
Yes, he's a prominent Black psychologist, well, was a psychologist, he tried. Mm-hmm. But he wrote a book, Blueprint to Black Power. And one of the chapters spoke about the policy formation process. And for the most part, most Black people we are totally dependent economically. Mm-hmm. And even if we're not economically independent and can position ourselves, like I hear, for instance, and I pay very particular attention to the word that many of the Black elected officials say when they're around Black people versus when they're around white people, or, you know, just in general. But most, for instance, are sort of bought and paid for.
That's what I think. I was waiting for you to say that, because if you are conscious and really interested in advancing the Black agenda, they're going to knock you down. They're not going to let you into those prime positions because that is not in line with their intent. So I was about to name some names, but I won't do that. But most of those so-called Black leaders are just, like he said, bought and paid for and not of very much value. And with that in mind, Haki, would it be worth our while to do some sort of grassroots identification of people who are conscious and try to push them ahead? Or what do you think would be a good strategy moving forward?
Now, let's take a little moment to recognize our sponsors. We will now return to our current episode.
I agree.
Absolutely, absolutely. And certainly that's one of the things that I've, you know, outside of, you know, certain entrepreneurial operations and opportunities, you know, I'm definitely involved in those processes on a, you know, local level, but also a regional level and a state level, to understand what influence that I can have, but also know that how much power one can actually achieve in a lifetime, but also to be able to find those allies where you can develop some independence. So it takes a certain character or sort of, charismatic, tactical,
right, to get the people behind you.
Correct. Without necessarily kissing, you know, the rings of certain puppet.
Do you think it's fear also? Because I was listening to the president of Haiti's wife do an interview after she got out of the hospital. And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I was angry with her because I felt like she didn't say anything worth me listening to. I didn't feel like she kept her husband's legacy alive. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm family something weird or something, but I thought you almost lost your life. You lost your husband right in front of you. They thought you were dead. At what point do you use this opportunity to go on social media and speak out, or go on the network that's allowing you to do this interview and keep your, like, why would they just kill this man? You have to know.
Ma'am, do you think that either she was afraid or she too has been bought and paid for? Because why is she here?
That scared me to think that. That's why I said the interview made me so upset, because I felt like, okay, if we are going down this road where they're killing people who have an agenda, what, like you said, some people don't want to get the shot or the vaccine. He was one of the people that was not pro-vaccine. He didn't want to.
For his whole country.
Right.
That's why they took him out.
Vaccine went
whole country
full scale after his death. So my thing is this, why aren't you saying this in this interview? I think my husband was killed because he was pro, you know, against vaccine. Like, he just was, you know, anti-vaccination. He was just, he wasn't with that. Like, what's wrong with you saying that? You almost lost your life. At what point
she probably will actually lose her life if she, you know, were to come out. Marked.
To me, I don't know. I feel like,
I mean, that's a good point.
I just felt like the interview was dead to me. I felt like she didn't give any information to all of us, I thought I was watching it for. I wanted to know, why did they assassinate your husband? What was the point of those type of people coming into your house in the middle of the night assassinating you? And if it was something even better than that, I heard they had this crater or something that was meteor that fell into their country.
I heard that too. Iridium or something.
Yeah, iridium. And if even if it's that, tell us, what's the point? What are you hiding it for? What are you, if they gave you the money, they already gave it to you. Speak your mind now. If they already tried to kill you, speak your mind now. You already know what the end result is. So what are you hiding? I just didn't understand, like, the fear of when you fight for something or you're fighting for something, so many people have that fear that what the end result is going to be, which it's already going to happen to you. That we're born to die. So it's going to happen. You don't want it to happen sooner than later, but at least do your work while you're here. And the work I felt like she should have done, not blaming her or anything, I just felt like she should have continued his legacy or whatever it was that man died for.
Wow. This is why, and thank you. Thank you for that. That I appreciate that, bridge to that conversation. This is why all our sisters need to teach the life and legacy of Winnie Mandela. I just interviewed her name is Dr. Toni Luck, and she's from the US, but she's a repat. She's actually lived in the DC area, went to Yale, but a biblical scholar of sorts, but very Renaissance elder, but she started a multi-million dollar business in South Africa. And you know, she was very, very tight with Winnie Mandela over the years. She met her through Minister Farrakhan some years ago. And so she shared with us, and I'll send you ladies that interview, how, you know, the strength of Winnie Mandela and how she kept her husband's legacy alive when he was in prison for that long time.
He sure did. And it didn't appear to me that he was very much appreciative of what she did when he promptly divorced her and married somebody else, because now you have to be strong while he's gone. When he was out, you fell back and supported his agenda. He's gone. You have to pick up the baton and hold it down. And now he's back. I'm sure he wanted her to fall back into that submissive position, but
yeah,
it changed who she was to do that in his absence
at that point. Right.
That's a beautiful commentary. I think that's right on point in terms of, how that perhaps could have gone. Exactly.
Let me ask you this, Haki. What about for people maybe like myself who realize that most of the African-American politicians are bought and paid for, don't accomplish anything they promised during the elections? What about for people like me who are like, I'm going to pass on that. It's not worth my while. It's not effective. It doesn't bring results. What would you say would you encourage one like that to get involved in politics, or what would be your position?
Well, I mean, I think one has to manage their time wisely, of course, and ultimately on many levels, some things may not be worth our time. But I also believe that is too much is given, much is expected. And, you know, I've been hitting people over the head, like throughout the whole Maryland area, the DMV, Baltimore area, over with the attempting to get people to read the work of Dr. Claude Anderson and Ron Walters. He was a professor at Howard as well as University of Maryland. But he considered himself a practical Black nationalist. I mean, you know, during the 70s and 80s, he actually ran both Jesse Jackson's campaign. I'm sorry, well, his 88 and 84, 84 and 88. No, I think Sharpton was 88, but 80 and 84 campaigns. But what he wanted, for instance, once he had a significant base that a second term, he wanted him to develop like an independent party. So
I remember that.
With Jesse Jackson. So, you know, I do believe, you have to be practical and understand, for instance, that most Black people are Democrats, and I see several different independent parties, you know, on a small scale. But I also see, you know, that, you know, the whole independent thing, as well as I try to look at what people in other parties are doing. But, you know, we have to be practical if we want people in position, for instance, to be independent. So
see, my position would be that doesn't resonate with me because I don't feel that it brings enough return on my energy. Oh. So yeah. I'm going to go in another direction. But the people who are politically minded and conscious, I will support you in that because you can get something done. But I don't have the patience for it because I don't see the value in it. But I think there's room for everybody to do something. And that way, all of it gets done.
No. I was introduced to Dr. Claude Anderson through Hidden Colors 1, 2, 3, and 4, of course. And what I love about him is that not only does he teach, but he also gives blueprints on what to do. A lot of people can teach, which is definitely, we all need to learn something. But when you don't have a blueprint on what you're teaching, it just confuses me. Like, I know that, you know, when I feel that when President Barack Obama was elected, we were all so excited to have our first Black president. But then we didn't do any footwork. You know, we didn't come in and we didn't elect senators and congressmen and aldermen and mayors and chief of police and sheriff. We didn't do any of that. We just was so happy. So I feel like when you have somebody that comes along after and tell you, okay, now you got this part of the puzzle, you need to fill in it with these things. That's what, and I feel like he does that. I listen to a lot of stuff he says and I'm like, okay, so now I know. Because at first I wanted to only go to Egypt. That's the only part of Africa I ever wanted to see. Now I'm interested in going to so many other places, meeting Kim and listening and hearing all the other places I need to go before I get to Egypt. Now, I definitely still want to go, but that is just the, I guess they say, the icing on the cake after you've gone all the other places. So he's, of course, I think he's probably gone to every place in Africa there is to travel. So he's very intelligent when it comes to that. So I think that if we can teach and give blueprints the way he does it is for Black people, I think that's how the liberation could start. I think that's how it can start.
So Hockey, we're down to our last 10 seconds. And so I would like to, the 15 minutes always goes really quickly, but I would like to offer you the opportunity to share any last information or anything else you want to share.
Certainly, thank you both for this opportunity. And just to the sister's comment, I love Dr. Anderson. I've been one of his prominent supporters in the DMV area. And I spoke at his hurt. Oh man, he has a holiday. I can't, it's still in my mind. But suffice to say to the sister, we will be traveling to Tanzania and South Africa. This year, there will be a conference in South Africa as well that I'll be speaking at that we're putting together here with the Teaching Artists Institute. So that's in October and November. So hopefully Kim follows, send the sister my information or for now or in the future, but looking forward to continuing the dialogue. And so, but if people want to look me up, I'm the Success Scholar. On several sites, and I'm all over the internet, YouTube's everywhere.
What's the name of your YouTube channel?
Raising Consciousness and Capital. Raising Consciousness and Capital. YouTube page. So I got probably about 600 YouTube videos by now. So
I've been talking. So our audience can find you there as well.
Yes.
Thank you, Hockey. We really enjoy having you. Thank you so much for joining us.
I will see you soon, Kim.
I truly appreciate you, and thank you. And sorry you had to wait.
No, it's okay. I'm good. Get ready to hop on one more for the night, and I'll be out.
Well, I'll see you soon. Take care. Thanks again.
Take care. God bless.
Well, this was a very interesting episode, as they all are. I enjoy them all. And we thank you all for joining us. We're glad you took the time to watch this episode and spend this time with us.